Marvel has a villain problem. Let's just be straight about that.
It's Thursday.
In my opinion, they got the best villains in comics, and we're just not getting them on screen. All right, welcome to Comics Asylum Podcast. My name is Steve.
Hey guys, I'm Vaughn.
All right, and we're kind of changing things up a little bit this week, where normally we would have a celebrity interview, someone from the industry, but today it's just gonna be Vaughn and I, and we're gonna be talking about some of the stuff that we're reading, taking a look at Marvels because we both had a chance to see it last night, as well as looking at what we're doing with Atrium and how we're packaging it and getting it ready to be sent off to our backers, which hopefully will be in the next couple of weeks.
Oh yeah, for sure. At this point in time, we just got the word down today that whenever you guys see this, but it's being shipped to us as we speak right now. Right. So yes. God forbid anything happens, you know, who remains snaps the world out of existence or some shit like that. You know what I mean? It's not gonna be one of those situations.
Well,
but I think we have pretty good chances that it'll get to us unscratched.
No, it's kind of it's interesting just waiting for it to come along. It's been a long kind of process. And so this is kind of like the last little bit, you know, waiting for it to end up in our hands. It's pretty exciting.
The ADD kicks in heavy when you're just checking the UPS, even though you know it's still in progress. So it's like it's one of those wild things, right? Is it here? Is it here yet? Is it here yet? Right? So it's gonna
Yeah,
be a
for
lot of
sure.
fun,
Well, let's kick things off with Marvels.
right?
I had a chance to see it last night.
Oh, did you? Okay.
And have you seen it yet?
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it last night around 7 p.m. So I went with a buddy of mine here down in the Hammer. For all you people that know, you know. Right?
And I saw it in Toronto, and I'll let you start, Vaughn. What'd you think of it?
So I gotta think again as to the last four Marvel movies. And I gotta say, out of all of them, I didn't mind this. Because I kind of had more expectations of, I kind of did like the 90s thing. I kind of checked my brain at the door, knowing that I'm just going to go in. It's like, like 90s, you knew it was action. You knew what you're getting. You know, Van Damme wasn't going to put an amazing performance or whatever, right? So you just kind of went in looking for what you're looking for, right? So it was kind of like that. And I had a good time. I mean, what's her name? The Toronto kid, the girl, Iman, I think her
Iman,
name is. Yeah. She's great. She saves the movie by a mile, right? She's a standout.
She brings so much energy to her role.
Oh yeah.
Like, and I will say this before, not to cut you off or
All right.
get your train of thought out of whack. I thought that the chemistry between the three leads was really good.
Yeah,
Right.
me too.
I'll give you my kind of like my take on what could have been kind of spiced up a little bit more, but I was sold on the chemistry between the three, right? And she definitely carried the same kind of energy that she brought to Miss Marvel into this flick. Like it
Yeah,
was
totally.
fun.
And the thing about it too is I didn't like Miss Marvel because like the first episode was good. And then afterwards, I don't care what anybody said, that was such a disbroken, convoluted mess based on you could tell that there was either more episodes that they didn't work out in the edit or something like that. And they had to cut it down. And I think this movie is a little bit the same. I think this is the shortest movie in this phase so far. And I definitely feel like they could have done with maybe at least another 10 to 15 minutes to kind of flush out some things. And that's just like bad continuity errors as well too, somewhere in some of the shots that they did. But overall, I like it. I mean, I think I like it better than, what was the last one? Liked it better than Thor. Liked it better than Doctor Strange.
What about Guardians? Was
Guardians?
Guardian was Guardian? I think Guardians was
Yeah,
probably the
Guardians was
last
actually
one.
the last one, yeah. No, I didn't like it better than Guardians. Guardians actually was pretty good. Guardians 3 was actually pretty good. I mean, it's a little bit heavy, but it was good overall, right? So, but I didn't mind it. I mean, a lot of people online are gonna dog it and say Brie Larson. She must be like Satan's cousin or something like that because people are just going in on her. But other than that, I don't have a problem with her. I know her from way back when from what was it, something with Tara, where she was the daughter of the character with multiple personalities.
United States of
United
Terror,
States
I
of
think.
Power. Yeah.
With Tony, is
And
that Toni Collette?
yeah, it was Toni Collette on Showtime. And that was a great show. And that's where I first knew her from.
I think for me it
And
was 21 Jump Street. I think the
okay.
first
I
one.
don't you know what the thing is? I never remember that she's in that movie. Never, but she's come a long way. But I didn't mind.
You know what? She's great in Lessons in Chemistry right now on Apple. Oh, yeah? I think it's on Apple. She's really good in that one.
That's the period piece one too, right? It's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's kind of like Mad Men meets Julia Child, kind of.
I have no problem with it. It's almost funny. I think she actually probably has the least amount of lines in that movie when you look at it, compared to Amon and Proton or whatever the other
Photon.
Photon. Yeah.
The actress's name slips my mind at the moment.
That slips my mind too. But everybody seems to be doing more than her in regards to the movie, and that's where I feel like it could have done better with at least another 5 to 10 minutes of story patching out, right? Classic Marvel, villain's a little bit super forgettable. Like, there's nothing about it. It's just a means to an end in regards to the story.
Yeah, right? You're absolutely correct there. Because I enjoyed it, right? I totally enjoyed it. My issue with the entire film, you touched on already, like, Marvel has a villain problem. Let's just be straight about that.
It's Thursday.
In my opinion, they got the best villains in comics, and we're just not getting them on screen, right? And then for me, I don't mind that it was short. I kind of liked it. It was never a point where I turned around and went, when is this over? So it kept moving. I liked it. I just thought that the interaction between Carol and Monica Rambeau, they are needed to be more, just even like two or three more bits of dialogue.
Yeah, a little more meaningful.
To kind of get into the relationship as to, you know, why they were the way that they were together.
Yeah, the angst between the two of them, yeah.
Yeah, it was almost like, you know, like in a soap opera, like if you're like a YNR fan or a Days of Our Lives fan, where it's, someone delivers a line, then turns away from the camera and walks out the door or something, or they cut to commercial. It almost seemed like the scenes were short like that. There wasn't that kind of back and forth where the actors had a chance to kind of like chew some scenery on each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's, I guess the writer in me was like, I wanted to see more of that.
Yeah.
Especially since her chemistry was so good.
The only person, I guess, to chew anything is Amon, right? She kills all of her scenes. But other than that, I mean, I like the villain as well, too. She's good in her role. I don't know what her overall end goal was in some of the ways. Like, it didn't seem straightforward enough to me. Like, it seemed like it was almost like she was kind of terraforming things. Like, I don't want to give it away, but like, it's a little bit light in regards to motivations, right? So,
yeah,
that's just right.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that. It's one of those, not to give anything away, but it's one of those things where, and I think this is a theme that's been running through a lot of the MCU, where the heroes are not necessarily heroic. They're almost trying to make up for their mistakes.
Yeah.
That seems to be a lot of what's going on, as opposed to at least the books that we read growing up. There's a threat. They have to go stop it. And the threat wasn't necessarily directly related to them. It was just a threat, and they had to go stop it. But there's a lot of soul searching on the hero's part for actions they've done.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's a Peter Parker moment for everybody, right?
Good old Pete. Yeah. Petey. Yeah, no. But, I mean, overall, I can't say, like, I think it's stood up better than Thor, and it stood up better than... Yeah. Multiverse of Madness, I feel at least. It's hard, right? And I mean, and now that they're introducing some new stuff that I just read today, that they pushed a whole bunch of best stuff back to 2025 now.
Right.
So none of that stuff is going to get, like, there's storylines that still haven't gotten wrapped up. Like, where's Vision? What's he up to? Right. So you're going to be like, we're going to be the next 10 years just trying to wrap up storylines from the last 6 months. Like, is that's how slow. It's weird because it's slow moving, but at the same time too, I feel like they're doing too much on some of these movies and the television shows. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out in the overall, but I'm trying to keep my faith.
Well, so. Yeah. I will say, if you're going to go see it for Brie, Iman, and Tayana. The three leads are fantastic. The story is the story.
Yeah.
Right? It just is what it is. It's not, don't go in there looking for anything kind of heavy or earth-shattering to move the universe along, the MCU along. But if you're going just for a good time, I would totally recommend it. And speaking of the MCU in terms of television, I had a chance to watch Loki last night, and it was great.
A lot of people, I haven't gotten a chance to see all of it yet, but so far I'll watch them all now that it's all done. I'll binge watch some of it this weekend. But I know a lot of people have said that my one buddy that I went to go see Marvels with last night, he says he likes it better than season one in a lot of ways. So it's interesting how people can say that. And I thought season one was pretty good. So I know a lot of people didn't, you know, I mean, feel it, but I'm eager to see it. I'm really eager to see it.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you did the MCU, if you did Doctor Who with the MCU's budget, kind of. Yeah. That's the feeling that I got from it watching the two seasons. Mm-hmm. And I know you can explore more in 12 eps versus, you know, hour and a half, but Loki is an intrinsic part of the MCU. And mm-hmm. Hiddleston is fantastic in the role. Mm-hmm. And they hit a lot of really interesting like story beats and character beats with him that mm-hmm. I think it's totally satisfying. It was really good. And it's got one of the most banging scores. Like the Loki theme to me is one of the best, best scores, best themes out there. And I think Marvel has kind of dropped the ball with their themes. You know. So when that's combined with the pathos of the story and everything else, it's really good. It's really rewarding viewing.
That's good to hear. Like right now, I'm only, when I listen to soundtracks, that's kind of my go-to work themes. I listen to the original Avengers, Endgame, and then the Loki season one soundtrack. Those are my Marvel ones.
So what is the Christopher Nolan Batman's got pushed out of your workflow?
No, he's in there, but like I'm talking like Marvel themed ones.
Right.
Batman's in there. For sure, Batman's in there. Dark Knight Returns?
Yeah. Right. One of our personal faves as a film.
Personal faves. They're in there. The Tron soundtrack, that's in there as well too. That's a big one for me.
Right.
But, I mean, the movie itself is whatever, but the soundtrack is great. The guys killed the soundtrack. Yeah. But yeah, so that's good to know though. I'm going to check it out. I'll probably binge watch it this weekend if I get a chance, right? But right now, my big thing right now is trying to get my head back around this whole kind of getting back into the comic book industry now with this whole publishing thing. So I've been kind of keeping tabs on a little bit more of everybody and kind of get back into my reading mode. So, but we'll see. We're kind of moving on to the next thing, I guess. I don't know. What are we talking about next?
Speaking of comics, let's go to that.
So I wanted to talk about the whole idea of, we're a little bit late on this one, but I think it's still a pretty prevalent topic, is the new thing of, if you don't know, New York Comic Con was just passed.
In New York, right?
And there was a big announcement down there that Ghost Machine, a new imprint for Image Comics, was starting up with some pretty heavy hitters kind of lining up the core makeup, and they're going to be exclusive to that title for, I guess, the foreseeable future, at least for the 2 to 5 years, I think they said, right? In some of the media, but just kind of open-ended. But really what they're trying to do is they're trying to kind of make their own imprint. It's kind of a throwback to what was it, 93, 92, when the original Image guys formed Image and tried to go out on their own and do their own things. The industry's in such a state right now. I think a lot of these guys are trying to make their push, right? So, but I think it's an interesting thing. I don't know what you think about it in the overall, like you saw it as well too. You have any takeaways from it?
Well, especially now that we're in the indie scene, right? It hits a little bit different. But I think that anytime creators have a chance to kind of, you know, guide or steer their own ship, that's for the best. And with a creator friendly imprint such as Image, you know, I don't think that it's a bad move. I think it's going to be interesting to see what they produce, especially with the talent that they have. on the roster, because yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's like it's Jeff Johns and Gary Frank and Jason Fabrock and Francis Manipal. So there's a whole bunch of amazing creators that yeah. are going to be either continuing stuff that's already been started or coming up with new titles and ideas in 2024. The thing that I'm not quite sure how it's going to like change the landscape is I still think that the big two are the engines that drive the bus, so to mm-hmm. speak. And they're what gets people into comic book stores. Mm-hmm. And so if Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman and, you know, those kind of titles are selling well, then you'll pick up any other titles that are coming out from independents through there. So I'm not quite sure, other than having another amazing outlet for creatives to kind of do their thing, I'm not sure what kind of blip it's going to cause on the overall landscape.
Yeah, that's a good thing. The only thing a blip that I could see that it causes is that the big two are out of some exclusivities for a while, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how they dig into their bag to fill that hole with guys like Jason Fabrock and even the big one, Jeff Johns, right? He's going to be off the table for a while. He's been notorious for a DC guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was their executive for a while over there.
Wasn't he involved with some of the film?
Yeah, so he was like one of the film execs for a while. He moved over to the entertainment side, and he was championing that for a while in the whole idea of migrating some of the content from print over into practical medias, right? So he was spearheading that for a while. So it's going to be interesting to see how they pivot. But I mean, DC and those guys have kind of done a whole restructuring in the last year or so with James Gunn and those guys over there, right? So I don't. It might be a situation where he's out, and that's kind of part of the whole thing where this is what has spurred this a little bit to push this forward a little bit more, right? Like, I'm just hypothesizing, right? But it's kind of interesting because for the last little while, you haven't heard much about him or even Jim Lee. Like, Jim Lee's over there, but outside of doing covers, I have no idea what Jim does. Like, nothing about Jim Lee or whatnot, right? But it's like, it's always amazing to see, like, almost the figureheads of some of these things, and yet they're not producing, right? Like, when was the last time we saw Jim on a regular book, right?
Good question.
Right? Outside of some covers here and there, and specialty covers, I think you're doing a lot of development stuff behind the scenes, but it's gone are the days when you used to have artists, you know, putting out two books a month in the early, like, the mid-90s and late 80s of Marvel, where you had guys bagging up. You used to have books like bi-monthly, right? At one point in time.
I'll never forget back in the day where Mark Bagley was doing bi-weekly Spider-Man issues.
Jesus. Yeah,
that guy was just a machine. Right. And McFarlane was doing Hulk and Spider-Man, I think, in the same month.
Yeah,
I know John Romita Jr. used to do it. I'm gonna argue that it's the art nowadays, though, is so complex and so heavy
mm-hmm.
that it's not like every panel is a work of mm-hmm. art in a lot of cases, a lot of backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's hard for artists to kind of give you six issues in a row, much less what was the run that some of those guys would have given you, like, you know, 3 years of a book, 36 straight issues. With yeah. maybe one fill-in. I just yeah. think that it's different nowadays. Just the level of detail that goes into each page. It's a lot.
A lot. But it's weird, too, though, because I think about the fact that with the technology and everything, right, and you have colorists that can bang out colors pretty fast, so, and all these things at your fingertips, like, I get, there's still a lot of work and the level of threshold of the work that's being produced, but it's, you'd almost feel like some of that stuff would become somewhat easier. You know what, in some ways, right? Like that age-old classic debate that all my friends have is it easier on to get on now as a musician, or is it easier to do stuff before, right? Like, it's a weird call, right?
Well, it's easier. It's easier to do things independently because distribution's king. Whether it's film, that's comics is in the same boat. You can make it, but if there's no way to get it to the public, then that's your hurdle. So you can make records, you can go be in a band and play your hearts out, get gigs. But if you have no way to press your music onto either an LP or showing your age, although it's coming back now, or onto a tape or onto a CD and then get it out to the masses, right?
Yeah.
It's difficult. And so comics, like, thankfully, Indiegogo and Zoop and Kickstarter exist for comics.
Yeah.
If you're not, going to be playing in the diamond arena.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of fantastic creators that are using Kickstarter and then just going straight to their backers.
Oh, totally.
Right? And so in that way, it's easier. And then you don't have like the monthly pressures because you're just making books and putting them out and making books and, whenever your Kickstarter is ready. But when you're on that every 4 to 6 weeks grind, right? And a lot of these artists who are able to use Kickstarter don't have to worry about like editorial.
Yeah.
Changing things midstream or getting scripts late and then having to rush, it's a totally different kind of work environment.
Yeah. Different animal altogether. I totally get that. Totally get that. And with that being said, that kind of brings up the indie stuff, which kind of works out perfectly in regards to our, you want to do the hot books or do you want to do talking about just the indie packaging and stuff that we did for our book?
It's up to you. You can take it whichever way you want.
All right. So I guess with that being said, I'm going to just get into some books that I've been reading. Actually, two of them are indie books, and I want to kind of start featuring indie books more heavily because I'm trying to play in the indie space as well too. So kind of know your medium in that sense, right? So I just got this one in the other day. I backed it a couple of months ago, and they had a pretty good turnaround. I think I backed it in, I want to say August. Or September, and I've already gotten the books in my hand. So this one is Clash of the Cryptids. It's done by Afterlight Comics. They're a UK independent indie publisher. And it's a great little book. It's a great little book. Production value is pretty good. Overall, like I was saying before, I'm not a big horror person, but I do have to appreciate that these guys tell a good story, right? It's a little bit more like Blumhouse in a lot of ways of how they're telling their stories. But it's like the old days of comics as well, too, where they're actually, there's actually a lot of story in there. It's not like two or three, no action panels per se. It's actually a pretty heavy story-driven kind of arc, right? So it's about a father that's trying to save his son, and he goes to any means that he can to make sure that he helps his son out. And that leads him down some treacherous paths in regards to that and stuff and whatnot. So good book. Good book. I mean, art's not really where I would like it to be, but that's just a preference thing. But overall, I have no problem with it. The production's fine. They put out a good product overall in the end. So that's Clash of the Cryptids. So if you guys want to check them out, we'll have a link in the description below as well, too, if you guys want to kind of check them out and see what they're doing out there. And then you want to go on yours, and then we'll kind of ping pong back and forth.
Sure. I'm reading The Incredible Hulk, I guess the relaunch of The Incredible Hulk. And it's interesting because I wasn't up on Immortal Hulk, but I kind of knew what was going on just by checking stuff on YouTube or Twitter. And being a longtime Hulk fan, I'm always interested in, how they're trying to reinvent the character. And I have to say that they're taking a very... it's a horror bent, keeping in the horror vein of your last book. Okay. And this book's basically a horror book and dealing with a lot of like the green door and the one above all and the one below all and the Hulk's connection to it. And it's really good. I'm really enjoying it. It's interesting because for me, my main question is with everything that has happened to the Hulk recently, where does that leave Banner? Right. Because I've always liked Banner as a character. Not so much the broken version of him, but just the dude who's trying to deal with the monster. inside of you. And so this book, it's starting to pose those kind of questions. And it's going to be interesting to see where, I think in issue 5, they actually pose that question. So it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, where they take it.
Is it a limited series or is it ongoing?
That's so a good far? Question. I'm assuming it's an ongoing because I don't know, to be honest with you, they just dropped the cover for issue 9 by Greg Capullo.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was a great cover.
And I can't lie.
Yeah.
It's hard to say that a guy who has drawn one picture of a character is in the all-time list of best Hulk artists. But Capullo's cover is so good. it's like, okay, take my money now. Right?
Contention, for sure.
And to make things even better, there's a new artist on the scene, a guy named Danny Earls. Mm-hmm. He's doing the interiors for those issues.
Yeah.
Man, can't wait to see it. Because that guy, his art rocks as well, too. I think the current artist is Nick Klein, and he's doing a great job on it. Mm-hmm. But when I saw that Capullo cover, I was like,
Well, he did a bunch of Wolverine covers too. So they got him doing heavy cover work, it seems, for 2024.
Yeah.
And it's like when Silvestri came back to Wolverine for a second there, I was like, okay, I could get this book, but seeing that they're only doing the covers, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
But the Wolverine one was pretty banging too, but I saw that Hulk. And whoever colored that Hulk, was amazing.
Production on the book is great.
Yeah. So that's going to be interesting. I'm hoping the story's thing. So I'll check it out for sure.
Yeah.
I'll check it out for sure as well too. But that's good to hear. Yeah. It's interesting to think because Greg hasn't been back to Marvel. Like he's doing a stint on Marvel. He hasn't been back to Marvel since I would say 93 or 94, I think.
That long, huh?
Yeah. Because the original Image guys left. And then he did some fill-in stuff afterwards, and he did X-Force and some other stuff. And that's where I know him from, I think it was. And then a little while after that, he ended up at Spawn. And he's been at Spawn and then jumping about after that ever since. And then he was at DC for whoever knows how long, right? So it's been a while since he's been back at Marvel. So that'll be interesting to see. Hopefully that moves the needle a little bit in regards to Marvel getting some numbers in their favor for some of their top books.
We'll see.
So we'll see. That's going to be a thing. But then, so on me, I have this one. So this is another one that's, this one's a couple, almost like in the first quarter of this year, I picked this up. And that's when we were kind of getting our heads around the whole Kickstarter thing. So it's in the vein of supporting indie and stuff like that. But also, it was just a killer book. And I liked Carl based on when he was doing his Flash stuff a couple of years ago. So I always liked his art overall. What I didn't know was this actually was a webtoon book initially for a while there. And then it
came Death Chains at Tanager, correct, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Death Chains. It was a webtoon, then it came out as it collected. And what's nice is different. It has a lot of anime vibes in the sense that it's all black and white with heavy zip tones and like streak lines and energy. And then in the back end, it's a little bit more traditional style that he does for his mainstream stuff, but the front end of the book and then is all black and white, and then the back end is color, and it's almost like his normal style, but that's also black and white. Flashbacks. So that part of the book is actually kind of like a throwback. So it's kind of weird how it works, but it's a nice little kind of, I guess, dichotomy of it. So it works really well in regards to the two styles are so different from each other, but it's still the same artist. So it really works, but it's going to be interesting to see when we actually see the issue 2, because I think he's drawing the webtoon right now for issue 2, but I haven't looked at it in a while. So it's going to be, hopefully it comes out next year, but a great book, quality book, and shout out to him. He helped us a little bit in regards to when we needed to know a little bit more about our packaging issues when we came to logistics and shipping. He put us on to a great shipping company that's local. It's where we could actually get our books out as well too. So, that was great of him, and he didn't need to do that, but he was more than willing to help us out. So
yeah,
that's great.
So, huge solid to Carl for sure. On my end, I'm not finished the series yet, but I'm thoroughly enjoying Dead Romans. I think I have issue 5 and 6 to read, and that's by Fred Kennedy and Nick Marinkovich. And it's a sword and sandals tale about Arminius, a Germanic prince raised in Rome. who has sworn vengeance against the empire that butchers his people. And so he kidnaps this woman, Haronia, who he wants to make his queen. And she too is a slave. And now there's a whole bunch of Romans that are coming down the pipe who will die to give her the throne, as the blurb says, that she never asked for. So it's it's great. Marinkovic's art is it's dark. It's lush at the same time. And Kennedy's weaving a great tale. And if you like Gladiator or anything like that, you can totally see this being, you know, on the big screen in that vein. It's a good read. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I saw it. I got to pick up my other books. It's probably sitting at my local comic store right now, because I think I picked up the last three, but I haven't gotten caught up yet. And I haven't really gotten a chance to fully read them all, right? But I love the art based on, it reminds me a lot of a Jay Lee mixed with like a Jock, mixed with like you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, definitely.
It has a lot of that, just like the dark lines and the real scratchiness of it all, right? Mm-hmm. So interesting. Is it just more fictional but historic, or is
no,
it based
no,
on?
No, it's based on a real story. So I'm sure you can classify it as historical fiction.
Yeah.
But it definitely has its roots in history.
For sure. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. I didn't know.
As far as I know.
Okay.
Fred, if I'm incorrect, please, you know, let me know.
Next time you see him.
Next time I see you, you can let me know. But as far as I know, it's connected to actual events, based on actual events.
Based on actual events. You know how that works. So.
Yeah, no, but it's great. Like, it's like, I have to say that for an industry that everyone is kind of, you know, unloading on, there's some great product being put out there. Like
I would,
you know, and I'm not saying, because I'm not reading necessarily Batman or those kind of titles, but some of the Kickstarters that we have supported, some of the indie stuff, some stuff out of Image, you know, a couple of titles out of the big two, some great storytelling. And like Titan, I just picked up the Titan reissue of, or relaunch, I guess, of Conan the Barbarian.
Oh yeah, you're saying, yeah.
And it's like someone got John Buscema and Roy Thomas, I guess he was doing those books. They were doing those books and are basically updating it for 2024. Like, they're just reissuing that time period in new material. It's great. The creative team is on point. The artist whose name escapes me right now, is phenomenal.
Is that the guy that used to, I don't know the artist, but I know the one of the guys that's doing the covers. I think he used to do some X-Men covers.
I think the variant that I have is a Dan Panosian.
Dan's also
the interior art, the guy, it's basically looking like at new John Buscema artwork. So you know, like, they're across the board, there are a lot of tales, and you see a lot too, like when you're going through Kickstarter, not so much on Indiegogo, but when you go through Kickstarter and you look at all the different titles that are trying to be funded, there's a lot of stuff in the indie scene that's very interesting and quite appealing. And you know, all obviously in the mainstream, there's still titles that are really good. So it's unfortunate that the industry's in a bit of a downturn, and things are not necessarily imploding. Well, I guess you can say they're imploding, especially if you own an LCS, a local comic book shop.
Comic shop.
And hopefully there's a way to save it and get it to bounce back. It's almost like Comics Ragnarok, where every little while there's a boom, and then the Midgard comic book serpent comes to eat itself and destroy the industry.
Right?
It seems to be cynical. But every time, it's not even just a downturn. It's like, this is the end.
Yeah,
this is the end. Remember that time when the last bit of comic books ever, and then something happens, kickstarts it, jump starts it, and then there's a boom again. So hopefully that's not the life cycle of the industry going forward, and we can, you know, find a happy medium where, you know, things are healthy for everyone involved, creators, distributors, and the companies as well too. So hopefully, but for sure, when it comes to product, there's a lot of very interesting stories out there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's even more so because things are so readily accessible in the market, and people are creating content in such waves now. Like, everybody is just like, art is out there in droves, right? Like
yeah, a lot of talented artists, you know, right? some good writers. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing about it too is so much easily to get access to things. So people are learning at such a exponential rate, right? The art's getting better and better, right? So there's great guys at all the big twos and all the small guys too. So it makes for an interesting marketplace, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot more competitive, but at the same time too, I think competitiveness breeds something as well too. So it'll be interesting to see.
Definitely. Right. And getting back to like the Kickstarters, like one of the things that we've been trying to wrap our heads around is not only the creative side of it, but also like the distribution side. So when it comes to when we're fulfilling the orders. And I backed Jimmy Palmiotti's Trigger Girl 6, and I've got it here.
Mm-hmm.
So great cover. And the thing that impressed me the most about this, and it actually is informing how we're going to be, you know, putting out our books, is it came in this plastic kind of package. Let me just zoom it back here. And it was one of those things like, so you open up the, let's see how it fits. Fits in here pretty neatly. And mm-hmm. the cool thing about it was when you get the normal packaging, right? Like different creators have different ways of, you know, based on their budgets on getting the books to you and what the packaging's like. So there's some that come in just a regular kind of mailing envelope that mm-hmm. is a little bit harder stock. And then there's some that come in like these amazing gatefold gatefold covers that are fantastic. Gemini. Yeah, Gemini is the, I think that, are they the company that we're going with?
Yeah, the Gemini mailers, yeah.
That's the ones, so the Gemini mailers, and it's kind of like a transformer, so, you know, opens up, you put your book in the sleeve, and then you can put all your like bookmarks or stickers or flyers or whatever in there, and everything is protected. Yeah. But what you'll get normally is you'll get the book or the books that you've ordered through the Kickstarters or whatever the crowdfunding source would be, and they're just in the regular bags and boards that you would get in the comic book shop. But Palmiotti's book came in that mailer, and I was like, this is fantastic, because if your book is out in the elements sitting on your porch for a bit, you know, and you're not home to pick it up right away, that's another way, Canada, another baby. Layer, added layer of protection. Sorry, say that again.
I'll say Canada, baby.
Oh yeah, right. You know, so if you're mailing stuff in like anywhere from like November to March, it could be sitting in the snow. You know, we could, you know, get our fair set of rain up here too. But like, it's just that little extra, a bit of thought that went into, you know, the packaging and the fulfillment of the product to the consumer that I was really impressed with. And so I remember mentioning it to you and said, I think I'd like to do that for Atrium.
And so we got that.
We'll be doing that.
We got our little things in, and I just did a little mock-up one. So mm-hmm. we have these ones, just straight black, right? Yeah. But these ones are like, they got the bubble as well too. So just to kind of a little bit added. So,
mm-hmm.
and then got then we got the Gemini mailer in there with the whole transformer thing going on. So you can kind of put your books in there.
Right.
And we got like a sticker and all that kind of stuff and whatnot. So I have a little sample book in there. This one's Mark Millar's Big Game, but those will be ours, right? And then those are what we'll be sending out to people. So I think, like you said, it's that little bit of fine touch that kind of shows that you appreciate the people that backed it, and you kind of want to show a little bit of additional professionalism as well too,
mm-hmm.
right? And because what you're putting out there into the ether, right? Versus just slabbing it in just a UPS envelope and shipping it out. Next thing you know, your book is all bent and crushed by the time it gets to you and dog-eared.
Yeah, I'll never forget, I think this was on Mike Ruth's Instagram feed.
Yeah.
Where one of the books, I don't know if it was a sketch cover or if it was one of his Kickstarter books.
I think
it looked like it was mangled by like a Rancor or something out of Star Wars. Like it was, this book just absolutely torn to shreds.
Obliterated.
Yeah. And it was like, you kind of breaks your heart seeing the damage done to the book. And so it was always, you know, on top of mind when we were getting our book in order, like, how do we do the best to prevent that? Like, I know there's never, you know, 100% guarantee on that. Like, always something can happen, but the more you can do to kind of just ensure that the customer, especially, you know, when you factor in the shipping rates and all that kind of stuff, that that yeah. you have to charge them. You want to make sure that they're getting their book and they're actually getting their money's worth.
Oh, totally. And the thing about it too is when you actually do the initial shipping rate and then you add these other things, you're talking like fractions of a gram. So you're not really that much of a variance to be able to just put them in these type of protective bags or even the mailers, right? Because Gemini mails are decently expensive, but the bags itself, Amazon sells these by the droves. I think I got 50 of them for under $20 or something like that.
Okay.
So just Amazon primed it, and that was pretty easy to go, right? And then it only added like maybe, I don't even think it was half a gram of weight to the whole thing. So it was nothing crazy when it comes down to, it didn't really impact our cushion in regards to our shipping rates, right? When we're going to send these out with Chit Chat, right? So
yeah,
I think it's worth it in the end, right?
Yeah. And you know, the next week we'll be all on pins and needles waiting for our books to arrive, and then we can start fulfilling those orders.
Oh yeah, that's going to be great. Well, hopefully we'll be back next week as well too. And then we'll be able to at least let people know and show them some samples of where we are at with everything and kind of go from there. But I'll probably be updating everybody on Instagram as well too. So be sure to check us out on Instagram, YouTube, and so forth to kind of keep abreast of where we are with everything, right? And we look to create more content around everything that we're trying to do here, guys, right? So, I think that's pretty much it for us for today, right?
Yeah, we're going to wrap it up here. But thanks again for listening, and we'll be in touch with you guys soon. All right, take care.
All right, guys. Everybody, keep it indie.